Welcome to Unity of Tucson.
I think to myself, well, what does New Thought teach about the purpose of life? And what do I actually think is true about the purpose of life? And, there is a consideration that was offered by one of the New Thought leaders in the early part of, I'm going to say it, the last century. Thomas Troward, who said, the purpose of life is to live in joy. That is the purpose of life, to live in joy. And here's the thing about that. No one can bring to us our joy. There is no circumstance out there from which we derive our joy. Our joy is an innate part of our beingness. And so as we allow ourselves to light up with joy, then we are seeing reflected in our experience that joy that we inherently are. And so the call is always to be the joy you wish to experience. That's the call. This past week, I've been giving a lot of thought about what I wanted to say, and I, knowing that the prayer chaplains were being dedicated into service and knowing that I was singing the song, Amazing Things, I just had this moment where I said, oh, the talk this week is called Imagine Amazing. What if we approached life with our imagination rooted in understanding everything as amazing? Every last expression in life is absolutely amazing. Yes. That's how I choose to use my imagination. How about you? There is, imagination is one of the 12 powers. We talk about the 12 powers. And imagination is one of the 12 powers, or one of the 12 faculties. And there's some discussion when we teach the class on the 12 powers. You know, people get confused by the word power because it sounds almost like I must be imagination, like power, like force. And I'm like, no, that's not what it's about. It's about an innate faculty. That what we call the 12 powers are 12 innate faculties. Now, a faculty is a capacity or ability that we are born with. But I want to be clear, too. They are things that we can learn as well. We can learn to adopt faculties and capacities in our life. What a great thing, because I'll tell you, if I didn't learn anything from the time I was born, it would be a very strange life. And so imagination is one of these innate faculties. It is a divine essence that exists as part of each and every one of our beingnesses. Is that a word? It is now, because I have imagined it into being. If Shakespeare can create a whole bunch of words, I think I can create a whole bunch of words too, because we're both part of the infinite divine power and presence that is God, right? And so why not? If it's a word that I can articulate, it's a word that exists, even if the dictionary doesn't agree with me. Here's the thing I think I want to acknowledge about imagination. The highest use of imagination, I believe, the highest use of imagination is to fully reflect our own original divine ideas. And what I mean by that is, as we have original divine ideas, and you know what? We all have original divine ideas. So the use of our imagination is to allow them to fully reflect in mind and then in our experience. Imagination is the ability to image the possibilities, to image the infinite possibilities, to picture, to conceptualize, to dream. We have the capacity to dream a life and to allow that life to come into the fullness of expression. So, why not dream big? Why not absolutely dream big? We can get so stuck in the mire of all the stuff that seems to be happening out there. We can get so stuck in all of that. And that can invite this, a limitation on what we think we can dream into being. If we put our understanding of the power outside to that stuff, then we have allowed that stuff to control us rather than knowing that we are the creators of our experience. And so when I say, let us imagine dreaming big, part of what comes up for me is to imagine this. Instead of consistently thinking, oh, what if it all goes wrong? What if it all goes right? What if we live from that point of view in every interaction that we have in life? What if it all goes right? And I mean all of it. What would life be like then? Woo, that's exciting to me. I get super jazzed up by that. Yes. What an amazing life. I can imagine amazing. How about you? Yeah. The truth is, we are always, 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 always using our imagination, whether we are aware of it or not, because it is an innate faculty. So we are using it 100% of the time in the way that we experience life. If I have an interaction with someone, there is an imaginative part of me that is informing that interaction. And I'm either imagining magnificence or I'm imagining challenge. So I'm going to choose to stay on the side of imagining magnificence, but that's a choice, and we are all empowered through our choices. So if we are always using imagination, what is the manner of its use? Do we maintain a focus on that which is detrimental, or might it be more beneficial to focus on the constructive? The constructive. Now, there's a caveat. Oh. Because sometimes we focus on the constructive to the detriment of understanding what's actually happening in our lives. And we give it, I'm going to call it this, we give it lip service. It's all unfolding for my highest and best experience of life, even though everything seems challenging in my experience of life right now. If I affirm, but I am denying the circumstances, it's what we call psychological denial, not spiritual denial. I'll explain spiritual denial in just a moment. If I am experiencing a challenge in life, and I have experienced challenges in life, I don't know about you, but if I'm experiencing a challenge in life, one of the most detrimental things I can do is to pretend it's not happening. It's all God. It's all good. Ooh. Because to me, well, we have a language for that. We call it spiritual bypass. But that airy-fairy idea of it's all God, it's all good. Now, here's the thing. It is a fundamental truth in the absolute that, yes, it is all God. It is all good. But we also get to inform the experience ourselves. And so if I am living in the consciousness of psychological denial, that doesn't have any effect on me, except I keep looking at it. There it is. I keep looking at it. So it actually does have effect, because I've given it the power. And that's where I will explain spiritual denial. Spiritual denial is denying that anything in the world of circumstance has power over me. That's spiritual denial. Nothing in the world of form has power except the power that you allow it to hold over you. And so, you are the authority in your life. You are the spiritual authority for everything that unfolds in your life. Imagine a life lived from that point of view 100% of the time. To not let yourself trip up. Imagine amazing. Today is an invitation to use imagination as a tool for transformation. That's the invitation today, to allow yourself to be spiritually transformed through the use of your imagination. That spiritual transformation begins with an understanding of your innate divine identity. I talked about it a little bit last week when I talked about the first two principles of the five basic principles of unity. The first two principles are God is all there is, that infinite creative source, that infinite creative power. The principle of creation is all there is. That's the first principle. The second principle is, if that's all there is, we must be part of that because we cannot be separate from that all that is. So we are divine. Our innate identity is divine. The wholeness of our beingness is divine. Linda Martella-Witsit one of the great contemporary authors in this movement, someone who speaks, what she is putting out into the world speaks to my soul so deeply. She offered this. She said, "The greatest mind action is to pivot away from a sense of ourselves as only human and toward an awareness of our divine identity." That is the greatest mind action that we can undertake, to remember who we are. That's what that means in our mission statement. Remember who you are. The wholeness of you is divine. So what if we got curious about what is possible, because the theme is curiosity. What if we got curious about what's possible when we imagine our life from the point of view of our divine identity rather than being rooted in a limited perception of life? What would that be like? I like to refer to this construct as, with this phrase, that it is my opportunity to stop believing in God and start believing as God. That is what we are called upon to do, to live our life from the point of view of beingness, because that is who and what we are. In the musical, I laugh because if you don't know me, I do come from a background of musical theater. I know it's shocking. In the musical Company, one of my favorite little snippets of a line in that show is, "You see what you look for, you know? You see what you look for." We all see what we look for. What are we choosing to see in the world? What we see is a reflection of that which is within each and every one of us. Ernest Holmes said, "Life," and this is a paraphrase quote, and I want to be really clear. I know where part of this quote comes from, but I've not been able to source the remainder of this quote. So this is maybe Ernest Holmes, you know, and somebody added to it. But I love this. He offered this. He said, "Life is a mirror." If you're familiar with Ernest Holmes, that should be fairly familiar to you. "Life is a mirror reflecting images of your thought. If you see confusion, don't blame the reflection." If you see confusion, don't blame the reflection. If you see challenge, don't blame the reflection. If you see upset, don't blame the reflection. You are in charge of what you see because you see what you look for, you know? It's like a funhouse mirror, right? You ever been to a funhouse, like at a carnival? And you go up to those mirrors and they're all kind of like wobbly and you look at yourself and you're like, wow, that's a very distorted view of what I look like. And then I have to think to myself, sometimes I look in a regular mirror and I think, that's a very distorted view of what I look like. I think all mirrors are funhouse mirrors now that I think about it. But we see the distortion in that reflection, right? But the distortion is not the truth of your being. It is simply the reflection of that which you have chosen to gaze upon. And so what are you choosing to see? What if we could shift the reflection by shifting our inner vision? That's a question of curiosity. That is a question for contemplation. What if we could shift the reflection by shifting our inner vision? Think about what that might look like for you. My belief, you get to decide what you believe. My belief is that that's what we're doing in prayer. That is what is unfolding in the practice of prayer, in the manner that we teach it here. Because prayer, as we teach it here, is not a supplication to something outside the self. It is an affirmation of that which is within. I think that what we are doing in prayer is inviting a shift in the reflection by shifting our inner vision, inviting a different inner vision, a different inner conception, and living within the expectation that it is so in the experience and expression of our lives. That's what prayer is all about. Prayer is not a beseeching, prayer is not a begging. Prayer is not a supplication to anything. Prayer is saying, I know who I am, I know how I fit within this thing called life, and I choose to experience life from that point of view and to not allow myself to be detrimentally affected by anything outside the self any longer. I lived with that for far too long. It takes a pivot. That's what it requires. It takes a pivot from seeing ourselves as limited human expressions to recognizing our divine identity. We can encourage our imagination through curiosity and imagine amazing. Rather than asking the question in any given circumstance, why is this happening? What if we shifted that? What if we pivoted that and instead looked at the experience or the circumstance and asked, what is possible here? Given the experience I am having right here and right now, what is possible here? What is within me to express as infinite possibility? We can rethink the concept of challenge in our lives. We absolutely can rethink it. What if we redefined all of those challenges as invitations to explore a new way of thinking? Oh, gee, this spiritual philosophy is referred to as new thought. That's what new thought means. Because the challenge of new thought is everybody thinks that we're bringing something new to the table. We are not bringing anything new to the table. We are expressing ancient wisdom in contemporary ways. That's what new thought is all about. It is an invitation to say, I choose to think a new thought in this moment and to allow myself to be transformed by the renewing of my mind. If you know that reference from Romans 12, 2, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That is how transformation unfolds. That is how transformation unfolds for each and every one of us. It begins in mind and flows forth into expression. And the prayer chaplains that have been dedicated into service here today are invited to support you in that transformation of your mind. Now, one of the things that comes up pretty substantially in the training of the prayer chaplains is this. The prayer chaplains do nothing to you. Well, then how does that work? They can only be effective in the demonstration of their prayer rooted in your receptivity to that prayer. And so they can have all the conviction, all the faith in the universe backing up their understanding of your beingness. If you are not receptive to that, you will only have the experience rooted in the level of your resistance. And so if you seek out a prayer chaplain, perhaps consider that prayer chaplain is there to invite you into an infinite state of receptivity. And as you experience that infinite state of receptivity, that the words they speak are taken on in your own mind and in your own heart to such a degree that they can no longer be denied and live from the point of view of a life that is imagined as amazing. That's what they're there to do. What could happen in shifting our self-perception from accepting human limitation to welcoming divine potential? What would that look like? You know, I had a disappointment once. Just that one time. There is one time in my life I've been fired from a job. I've had a lot of, my previous life as an actor, I've been a minister now for almost 14 years in consistent ministry. My previous career was as an actor, and as an actor, there are times of feast and famine. There are times when you're doing great, and audition after audition, you're booking jobs, and you're getting to play in the theater, and then there are times where it all just isn't happening. I had a side job for a time as the personal assistant to a celebrity. I will not tell you who the celebrity was because I do, honor that there is privacy that I would like to maintain. This particular, and this is all before my new thought experience, right? One day, I was working out of this individual's house, and I come down. I came to work, and I'm, you know, working in the dining room kitchen area of their home, and you don't know who it is, so you don't care probably. This is someone who would typically sleep till about noon, and I was usually at work by 9, so I had a few hours. Well, finally, I'd been there for a few hours, and my boss came down, and they looked at me and they said, "I'm going to have to let you go." I was in such a state of shock in that moment because, number one, I don't think I did anything that would have led to that decision. I was also in such a state of shock because it was the first time I had been told that I was fired from a job that I didn't think to ask why. To this day, I have no idea why I was let go. And the reason I bring that up is because I could have continued to accept the limitation in mind of disappointment and allowed it to play out and play out and play out, and I could have lived in a state of ultimately depression. I won't deny, because it was before New Thought, I did let that take hold for a short time, but not a long time, because I came to the realization that that experience is not what defines me. Rather than perceived hardship, I stepped into the possibility of what can be. And one of the magnificent lessons that I was offered, because I had a very close friend who was with me through all of this, and she turned to me one day and she said, "Will you stop being depressed?" I said, "I don't know how to do that." She said, "The opposite of depression is expression. Go create. Go create something." And this ties right into our third principle, that thoughts and beliefs and feelings create the events and experiences of our lives. Thoughts and beliefs and feelings are the core of the creation for everything we experience in our lives. All thought is backed by belief and is rooted in a feeling tone. And so every thought, every belief, and every feeling is constantly creative in our lives. So our lives are a state of constant prayer. It does not need to be a formal version of prayer like we teach in class, like I'm about to start teaching in class on Wednesday nights. It doesn't have to be that formalized version of prayer. Every thought, every belief, every feeling is creative in your life. And so everything is prayer. Everything, all of it. We are praying, whether it is formal or it is just our lives, our thoughts unfolding, right? Everything is prayer. Prayer and meditation are the practical tools we teach to create the life we imagine. That's the fourth principle, that prayer and meditation are the tools we teach to address those thoughts, those beliefs, and those feelings. And we are always, always in a state of being empowered. Because what happens in prayer is that we are not addressing the effect, ever. We are addressing the cause. The cause is in mind. The cause is entirely, and you know, it's funny because I always say the cause is in mind. Note that I don't do the cause is in mind. The cause is in mind because mind is not the brain. Mind is the core of your being. You are fully mind expressing. Curiosity leads us beyond the constructs of limitation and invites us into infinite possibility. So the question that I leave you with today is this: what amazing things are you ready to imagine into being? Peace and blessings. You are magnificent. The home practice this week is in three parts. Oh gosh, he's giving us one of those long things. It's actually fairly simple, I think. The first part of the home practice this week is to affirm. To affirm. Craft an affirmation. This is on you. To craft an affirmation that reflects the amazing possibilities you choose to experience. Craft an affirmation. Do it by the end of today. Just one affirmation. That's all I'm asking for. The prayer chaplains have to come up with lots of affirmations in their training, right? You only need to do one. When you have crafted that affirmation, step into the activity of imagination. Imagine. Close your eyes Imagine your life as a reflection of that divine identity. And ask yourself, what does it look like to embody this affirmation? And then solidify through the practice of prayer. Use affirmative prayer to design your relationship to that experience. That is the homework. I always see a lot of cameras, our phones come out and take pictures of that. This is also posted on our website on the video archive page. So if you were not able, and it's on Facebook now. Sherry's putting it on Facebook. Thank you, Sherry. Yes. So that is the home practice this week, and I invite you to take that to heart.
Hi, this is Reverend Jonathan Zenz, and I want to thank you for listening to the podcast of my Sunday message. Your financial support will ensure that we can continue to offer this as an option for inspiration. You can make your tax-deductible contribution in any amount on our website, unitytucson.com. Once again, thank you for listening. You are magnificent. Namaste.